Namaste Parvajikacharya Asatar Satashishi Madhavan Grace Sri Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adwaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopinath Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Mathura Dham Ki Jai, Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai, Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai, Gangame Jamuna Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the electronically assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane, Namaste Sarasvati Deve, Gauravani Pacharane, Nirvase Sisamyavani Paskra Chadi Sitarne, Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam, Sri Gurun Vaishnavam Sacha, Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam, Sadvoitam Sadvadutam Patrijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, Text 26. This is the passing away of Bhishma Dev in the presence of Lord Krishna, Bhishma's instructions to Yudhisthira. This is about Varnashrama and its relationship to Bhakti. Purusha Swabhava Vihitam.
Purusha Swabhava Vihitam.
Yata Varnam Yatashramam.
Yata Varnam Yatashramam.
Vairagya Rago Paribhyam.
Vairagya Rago Paribhyam.
Amnato Bhaya Lakshanam.
Amnato Bhaya Lakshanam.
Purusha Swabhava Vihitan.
Purusha Swabhava Vihitam.
Yata Varnam Yatashramam. Vairagya Rago Padibhyam.
Vairagya Rago Padibhyam.
Amnato Bhaya Lakshanam.
Amnato Bhaya Lakshanam.
Please chant.
Purusha Svabhava Vihitan.
Purusha Svabhava Vihitan.
Yathavarnam Yathashramam.
Yathavarnam Yathashramam.
Vairagya Rago Padibhyam.
Vairagya Rago Padibhyam.
Amnato Bhaya Lakshanan.
Amnato Bhaya Lakshanan.
Purusha Svabhava Vihitan.
Purusha Svabhava Vihitan.
Purusha Svabhava Vihitan.
Yathavarnam Yathashranam. Vairagya Rago Padibhyam. Amnato Vaya Lakshanam.
Purusha Svabhava Vihitan. Yathavarnam Yathashramam.
Vairagya Rago Padibhyam.
Amnato Vaya Lakshanam. Purusha.
The human being.
Svabhava.
By his own acquired qualities.
Vihitan.
Prescribed.
Ta.
According to.
Varnam.
Classification of tasks.
Okay, Prabhu, we have a lot of devotees on right now. Please, everybody who's on Skype, mute.
Telephones as well.
Otherwise, you know, I'll have to hang up. So please, if you could all do that. Thank you, Mother Imala.
Okay, it's a long purport, and Srila Prabhupada is going to be describing the function of Varnashram, the Varnas and the Ashramas. Translation, as Yudhisthira's inquiry, Bhishma Dev first defined all the classifications of castes and orders of life in terms of the individual's qualifications. Then he systematically, in twofold divisions, describe counteraction by detachment and interaction by attachment. Okay, so Bhishma Dev described the Varnas, the Ashramas, according to individual qualifications. Then he described detachment and attachment. So Prabhupada's purport. The conception, please listen to this first sentence very carefully. This is the essence of what we're going to look at today. The conception of four castes and four orders of life as planned by the Lord himself, Bhagavad Gita 4.13, that's the Chaturvarna Mayashristam verse, is to accelerate transcendental qualities of the individual person so that he may gradually realize his spiritual identity and thus act accordingly to get free from material bondage or conditional life. So in this first sentence, Srila Prabhupada is using the word accelerate. So if we've ever wanted to accelerate our transcendental qualities, so that we can get free from conditional life, then this purport is relevant to us. Going on with the purport, in almost all the Puranas, the subject matter is described in the same spirit. And so also in the Mahabharata, it is more elaborately described by Bhishma Dev in the Shanti Parva, beginning from the 60th chapter. The Varnashrama Dharma is prescribed for the civilized human being just to train him to successfully terminate human life. So this is another indication of the function of Varnashram, to successfully terminate human life, to get the benefit of human life. Self-realization is distinguished from the life of the lower animals engaged in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. Bhishma Dev advised for all human beings 9 qualifications. So just to, before we read this, look at how this purport is organized. First, Srila Prabhupada is going to give Bhishma Dev's 9 qualifications. This is morals and ethics for all human beings. Then he's going to look at specific qualifications for each varna. Then he's going to examine the ashramas. And remember, this is the principles to accelerate spiritual life. So here's the 9 qualifications Bhishma Dev gives. That's for everyone. 1, not to become angry. 2, not to lie. 3, to equally distribute wealth. 4, to forgive. 5, to beget children only by one's legitimate wife. 6, to be pure in mind and hygienic in body. 7, not to be inimical towards anyone. 8, to be simple. And 9, to support servants or subordinates. One cannot be called a civilized person without acquiring the above-mentioned preliminary qualities. So again, these are for everybody. No anger, no lying, equal wealth, forgiveness, to have children only with your spouse, to have a pure mind and clean body, have no inimical feelings towards anyone, to be simple, and to support people who are subordinate to you. I'm sure you can imagine that we could speak on each of those topics for at least a month or maybe 6 months, just on each of these topics. For example, how to give up anger, how to give up lying, what does it mean to equally distribute wealth, and so forth. Okay, so Prabhupada says these are the preliminary qualities going on with the purport. Besides these, the brahmanas, the intelligent men, the administrative men, the mercantile community, and the laborer class must acquire special qualities in terms of occupational duties mentioned in all the Vedic scriptures. So now Prabhupada's saying that those were the baseline qualities. Now we have additional qualities according to Varna. Now he's going to describe for the brahmanas. For the intelligent man, going on with the purport, for the intelligent man, controlling the senses is the most essential qualification. It is the basis of morality. Sex indulgence, even with a legitimate wife, must also be controlled, and thereby family control will automatically follow. An intelligent man abuses his great qualifications if he does not follow the Vedic way of life. This means he must seriously make a study of the Vedic scriptures, especially of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. For learning Vedic knowledge, one must approach a person who is 100% engaged in devotional service. He must not do things which are forbidden in the Shastras. A person cannot be a teacher if he drinks or smokes. In the modern system of education, the teacher's academic qualification is taken into consideration without evaluation of his moral life. Therefore, the result of education is misuse of high intelligence in so many ways. So to summarize this section, Srila Prabhupada is here giving for the brahmanas, that the most important thing is to control their senses. They specifically mentioned sex. We know that the biggest scandals, even in modern society, are scandals having to do with sex and money. So to control sex life even within marriage, to study the Vedas, to follow all the injunctions of the scripture, and to take shelter of a devotee. So that's for the brahmanas. Now, next paragraph. The kshatriya, the member of the administrative class. By administrative, by the way, Prabhupada means government administration. He doesn't mean business administration. Is especially advised to give charity and not to accept charity in any circumstances. Modern administrators raise subscriptions for some political functions, but never give charity to the citizens in any state function. It is just the reverse in the injunctions of the Shastras. The administrative class must be well-versed in the Shastras, but must not take to the profession of teachers. So they know the Shastras, but they don't teach them. The administrators should never pretend to become nonviolent and thereby go to hell. When Arjuna wanted to become a nonviolent coward on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he was severely chastised by Lord Krishna. The Lord degraded Arjuna at that time to the status of an uncivilized man for his avowed acceptance of the cult of nonviolence. The administrative class must be personally trained in military education. Cowards should not be elevated to the presidential throne by dint of numerical votes only. The monarchs were all chivalrous personalities, and therefore monarchy should be maintained provided the monarch is regularly trained in the occupational duties of the king. In fighting, the king or the president should never return home without being hurt by the enemy. The so-called king of today never visits the war field. He is very much expert in artificially encouraging the fighting strength in the hopes of false national prestige. As soon as the administrative class is turned into a gang of mercantile and laborer men, the whole machinery of government becomes polluted. So here Prabhupada's given two main things for the kshatriya. First of all, the kshatriya has to distribute wealth. By the way, the kshatriya doesn't generate wealth. Kshatriya distributes wealth. And the other is the kshatriya has to be willing to protect and to be on the front line. Okay, next paragraph. The vaishyas, the members of the mercantile communities, are especially advised to protect the cows. Cow protection means increasing the milk productions, namely curd and butter. Agriculture and distribution of the foodstuff are the primary duties of the mercantile community, backed by education and Vedic knowledge and trained to give in charity. So also the vaishyas here are also giving in charity. Going on. As kshatriyas were given charge of the protection of the citizens, vaishyas were given the charge of the protection of animals. It's a very important sentence. We'll explore more in a few minutes. Animals are never meant to be killed. Killing of animals is a symptom of barbarian society. For a human being, agricultural produce, fruits, and milk are sufficient and compatible foodstuffs. The human society should give more attention to animal protection. The productive energy of the laborer is misused when he is occupied by industrial enterprises. Industry of various types cannot produce the essential needs of man, namely rice, wheat, grains, milk, fruits, and vegetables. The production of machines and machine tools increases the artificial living fashion of a class of vested interests and keeps thousands of men in starvation and unrest. It should not be the standard of civilization. So here Srila Prabhupada is saying the vaishyas have to earn honest wealth, not exploitive wealth. Again, yeah, I mean, you can see each of these paragraphs is, you know, months and months of discussion. Okay, next paragraph. The Shudra class is less intelligent and should have no independence. They are meant for rendering sincere service to the three higher sections of the society. The Shudra class can attain all comforts of life simply by rendering service to the higher classes. It is especially enjoined that a Shudra should never bank money. As soon as the Shudras accumulate wealth, it will be misused for sinful activities in wine, women, and gambling. Wine, women, and gambling indicate that the population is degraded to less than Shudra quality. The higher caste should always look after the maintenance of the Shudras, and they should provide them with old and used garments. A Shudra should not leave his master when the master is old and invalid, and the master should keep the servant satisfied in all respects. So here you see there's a relationship of love, not exploitation of the laborer class. Going on. The Shudras must first of all be satisfied by sumptuous food and clothing before any sacrifice is performed. In this age, so many functions are held by spending millions, but the poor laborer is not sumptuously fed or given charity clothing, etc. The laborers are thus dissatisfied, and so they make agitation. So in each of these paragraphs, for the each of the four varnas, Srila Prabhupada is looking at the ideal, and he's looking at the perversion or the exploitive. Okay, last paragraph of the purport. The varnas are, so to speak, classifications of different occupations. An ashrama dharma is gradual progress on the path of self-realization. Both are interrelated and one is dependent on the other. The main purpose of ashrama dharma is to awaken knowledge and detachment. The brahmachari ashram is the training ground for the prospective candidates. In this ashrama, it is instructed that this material world is not actually the home of the living being. The conditioned souls under material bondage are prisoners of matter, and therefore self-realization is the ultimate aim of life. The whole system of ashrama dharma is a means to detachment. One who fails to assimilate this spirit of detachment is allowed to enter into family life with the same spirit of detachment. Now that's an interesting statement. Read that again. One who fails to assimilate this spirit of detachment is allowed to enter into family life with the same spirit of detachment. So if you're not fully detached, still you enter into family life with some idea of detachment. Going on, therefore, one who attains detachment may at once adopt the fourth order, namely renounced, and thus live on charity only, not to accumulate wealth, but just to keep body and soul together for ultimate realization. Household life is for one who is attached, and the vanaprastha and sannyas orders of life are for those who are detached from material life. The brahmachari ashram is especially meant for training both the attached and detached. So brahmachari life is a training ground. One is expected to spend the bulk of one's life in the other ashrams. Household life if you're attached, and vanaprastha sannyas if you're detached. Okay, the verse. Purusha swa bhava vihitan yata varnam yatashramam vairagya ragopadibhyam Amnato Bhayam Lakshanam. At Maharaj Yudhisthira's inquiry, Bhishma Dev first defined all the classifications of castes and orders of life in terms of the individual's qualifications. Then he systematically, in twofold divisions, described counteraction by detachment and interaction by attachment. So Prabhupada talks about here that the purpose of Varnashram is to accelerate our spiritual life, to accelerate our transcendental qualities. So one of the questions that myself and I'm sure other traveling preachers get asked all over the world, how can I make it go faster? How can I actually see Krishna? How can I experience the spiritual benedictions that are given in the Shastra? Why is it taking so long? The famous song of George Harrison, which was a hit when I was in secondary school and high school. I really want to see you, Lord, but it takes so long, my Lord. I really want to show you that it won't take long. So to accelerate, to make it go faster, not to be dragging and dragging and dragging. As a teacher in primary and secondary school, I noted that we would teach basically the same grammar for 12 years. And I thought, why did it take so long for the students to grasp these basic concepts? Then I remember one of my students made up her mind one day, and she was about 12. I'm going to learn this. And within 6 months, she had learned everything. So it doesn't have to take very long. Now, how is it that the varnas and ashramas act to accelerate the process of spiritual life? So I've given this analogy before, but let's say that you've broken your arm. So what is the cure for a broken arm? The cure for a broken arm is a cast. That's what's going to allow it to heal. And that's our situation with Krishna. We have originally a relationship with Krishna. Mamai Vamso Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana Jivera Swarupaya Krishna Nityadas. We are originally Krishna's servants. We have a relationship with Krishna. And that relationship has become broken. And now we have the capacity. We have, just like the body has the capacity to heal itself, we have the capacity to heal that relationship if we keep to certain limits. That is bhakti. Bhakti is acting like the caste. That bhakti means shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu smaranam, archanam, jasyam, padasevanam, atmanivedanam. That's the caste. That's the only thing that's going to cure our broken bone. To stay within the limits of bhakti. However, when you first break a bone, when you first have a broken bone, there's also generally a lot of pain. So I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but according to modern medicine, giving some painkillers in the beginning of having a broken bone helps to speed the healing. Now, why is that? Because when we're in pain, we tense the muscles and we don't have proper blood flow, and therefore the healing is extended. The healing time is extended because the injured area isn't getting proper blood flow. Now, the reason our body does this is our body is trying to create a natural cast. I was a couple years ago in a car accident in Moscow where we were hit from behind. It wasn't a terrible accident, but after that I had such horrible pain in my back. When I went to see an osteopath, she told me that what happens when there's trauma is that the body freezes all of the muscles to provide a natural splint for healing, a natural cast. And she put me through some things to relax everything. So when there's pain, the body creates a natural splint in order to prevent further injury. Unfortunately, this natural splint also restricts blood flow, which is what has to ultimately aid the healing. So the doctors want the muscles to relax enough to speed the healing inside the cast. Therefore, they give painkillers. Now, if you only give painkillers, suppose you don't put a cast on the broken arm, and you only give painkillers, what will happen? What will happen? So actually, the broken arm, not only will it not heal, but it'll probably become worse because you'll be lulled into thinking there's no problem there, and you'll use it, and you will probably damage it further. Also, painkillers don't really cure the problem. So painkillers by themselves will make the problem worse. The painkillers by themselves do not cure the problem. And if you continue the painkillers for too long, you may have a problem with addiction to painkillers. The painkillers may create their own problem. However, in the beginning of an injury, they really do accelerate the healing. So that is the role of the system of Varnashrama. And those of us who are in the Isha Upanishad class, we were just looking in Mantra 17, where we found some identical points to Bhagavad Gita 9:30, where Srila Prabhupada is speaking about how that until we're 100% pure, we have two dharmas. One is our original dharma of bhakti, our original spiritual occupation, and the other is our material duties, according to our body and mind, as it says here, in terms of the individual's qualifications. And Prabhupada says the ideal situation is when those are paralleling each other, when the duties of the body and mind are running parallel to the spiritual duties. Then the material duties become spiritualized. They aid the spiritual duties. They accelerate the spiritual duties. They accelerate the platform of bhakti. They act as a catalyst for bhakti. And not only for the individual, but if people live like this in general, the whole society also then is facilitating bhakti. If you have a whole society that's engaging in both their spiritual activities and their material activities properly, then bhakti is accelerated. Now, the difficulty we have is that you can't just stop material activities and only take up the process of bhakti. You can't just kind of grit your teeth and say, well, I'm just not going to take any kind of painkiller. You know, I'm just going to tolerate the pain until the arm's set enough. Because, unfortunately, we have material designations. The word here in the Sanskrit is upadhi. We have particular designations. And therefore, if we don't engage in our material activities according to the direction of Shastra, which will then allow them to act as an accelerator for our spiritual life, then we'll engage in our material duties in some concocted way, which may act to harm our spiritual life. You know, if you just say, well, I'm just going to take whatever painkiller I want, I'm going to take it in whatever dose I want, then who knows what you're going to do to your broken arm. You may end up causing all kinds of harm, and you may make the process take longer. You know, the poor doctor may have to take off the cast and deal with the harm you've done to your body before you can even work on the healing process. So Prabhupada, in going through this purport, especially with the varnas, he's described how each of the varnas today are being done improperly. And we can say the same about the ashramas, although he doesn't discuss that in this particular purport, that the ashramas can also be done improperly. And we see that all these varnas and all these ashramas are present in modern society. Why? Because you can't just walk away from your material duties. That's not possible. Krishna says that you must do your prescribed duties. If you don't do them properly, you'll do them improperly. It says 3rd chapter and 18th chapter. But when our material duties are done improperly, they impede our healing. When they're done properly, they speed our healing. Okay, somebody's sending me. Okay, I will try to talk more slowly. I was talking quickly because I had a lot to cover, but I will slow down. All right. Let's look now at each of the varnas and each of the ashrams. This is a summary. It's really a summary. It's a simplification that we're going to go through right now. And like all simplifications, there's some distortions involved in that simplification. As soon as you simplify something, there's some level of distortion. So please keep that in mind as we go through this. It is a real simplification because each of the points in this particular purport we could go through at great length. Okay, I hope I'm speaking slowly enough for you. I apologize. I was going a little too fast before. So let's look at the varnas. And the reason we're going to go through this list is it so that we can try to ascertain where I belong. Because we have two things to taking our proper medicine. First of all, what medicine should I be taking? That what varna am I in? What ashrama am I in? And then how do I take it properly for best healing? For the goal of accelerating bhakti. Again, we're not interested in just varna ashram for its own sake. We have no interest in varna ashram for its own sake. Okay, what do the different varnas produce? You think of what kinds of things do you like to produce? What do you like to manifest? What do you like to create? So the Brahmanas like to create wisdom and guidance. The Kshatriyas like to produce peace, order, care for others, protection. The Vaishyas like to produce honest natural wealth and nourishment. They like generating wealth. Please keep in mind the Kshatriyas collect and redistribute wealth. The Vaishyas generate wealth. So two kinds of people that tend to be very interested in wealth, the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas. Shudras are interested in wealth for their own personal use for spending it. The Shudras want to produce services, entertainment, objects, crafts. They want to produce objects of beauty and objects that will give pleasure to others. They want to give services that give pleasure to others. They want to give entertainment that give pleasure to others. So do I want to produce wisdom and guidance? Do I want to produce peace, order, and care, hospitals, schools, roads, wells? Do I want to produce honest natural wealth? Or do I want to produce objects, entertainment, and services that aid the society and bring beauty and harmony? And you can see that all four of the Varnas are trying to bring beauty and harmony. One through knowledge, one through care, one through honest wealth and use of natural resources, and one through the objects that surround our life. What's our main interest? So the Brahmana's main interest is in liberation and in truth. The Kshatriya's main interest is in morality and ethics. The Vaishya's main interest is in wealth and abundance. The Shudra's main interest is in pious pleasures. What do they want to protect? So the Brahmins want to protect knowledge. They want to make sure that the knowledge and the wisdom in society is pure, that people have the proper guidance, that people have the right map, shall we say. And people have the right map. The Kshatriyas, what they want to protect is people. They want to make sure that while you're following the map of the Brahmanas, that you've got places to rest on the way. There are hotels, there are restaurants, there are medical facilities if you need them, that the roads on the journey are in good working order. The Vaishyas want to protect natural resources and animals. So the Vaishyas want to make sure that as you're on this journey, you have enough to eat, and that the ecology is maintained. The Shudras want to protect the arts and crafts and skills. So the Shudras want to make sure that your vehicle is in proper working order, that you have nice music to listen to in your car as you're going towards the destination of bhakti, that your clothes are comfortable to wear. So everyone has this area of protection, and each person wants to, if they're Vaishnavas, each person wants to make sure that their area is used in Krishna's service and protected from the lower modes of nature. So the Brahmins want to make sure that the knowledge and guidance in society is pure. The Kshatriyas want to make sure that people have all facility in a pure way. The Vaishyas want to make sure that they're particularly concerned with the environment, with the natural resources, with the land, the water, the air, the animals. And the Shudras are particularly concerned with the purity of the arts. The other day, I took three of my grandchildren to an exhibition of Balinese music and dance. And you can see these are people, they wanted to preserve the pure form of their arts. They wanted to make sure that it didn't become compromised and it was used in a way to people. So, of course, these are also compared to the head, the arms, the belly, and the legs. Are you providing guidance? Are you providing care? Are you providing wealth and food? Or are you providing services and crafts? Now, also, there's different ways of, say, organization or control. So each of these people like to be controlled in a different way. The Shudras like to be controlled by rules and law. They want to know what's the rule. Okay, I do this. This is the rule. What's the reward? What's the consequence? That's how they like to live. What's the rules? The Vaishyas like to be controlled through competition. So the way the Vaishyas like to be controlled is, okay, somebody's making a better quality product than me at a lower price, therefore I will try to give the customer better service than my competitor at an even lower price. So the Vaishya doesn't like to be controlled by laws. The Vaishya likes to be controlled by his urge to be the best, to get market share. That's what's driving the Vaishya. What's driving Kshatriya are ethics and norms and principles. So if you're very interested in morality and ethics and norms, you really, what is proper behavior? What is righteous? What is the right thing to do? So that's how the Kshatriyas want to be guided. They're not so much guided as by competition with other kings, although that's there. They're not so much guided personally by following the law, although certainly they're interested in the law. But what guides them personally is what's the right thing to do. What's the right thing to do? So the Shudra, when the Shudra makes decisions, they say, what's the rule? When the Vaishya makes decisions, they say, what can I do to beat out the competition, to be better than the competition? When the Kshatriya makes decisions, they say, what's the ethical thing to do? What's the moral thing to do? The way Brahmins make decisions is by what's called mutual adjustment. So the Brahmins regulate each other through the consensus and through looking at permutations, as Prabhupada would say, looking at the Shastra from all different angles of vision. Brahmins are not interested in just, okay, this is the law, we have to follow it. Brahmins are certainly not generally interested in competition, though lower levels of Brahmanas may engage in competitive debate. And Brahmanas are not interested either in some standard, okay, this is just the norm, this is the principle. Brahmins are more interested in how to apply it. If we think about a judge has to interpret the law. A judge has to interpret the norms and the principles and apply them to particular situations. So the Brahmins control each other through mutual discussion, through debate, through consensus, through delving deep into the meaning of the Shastras. So if you look at these, you can get some idea as to where you're most comfortable. You know, where am I as a person most comfortable? Here we talk about, you know, the specific qualifications. And our varna is what, where do we feel enlivened? If you're in the wrong varna, you will feel depleted and exhausted. And if you're in the right varna, you will feel enlivened. Because each varna is like our particular food. Just like in Ayurveda, there's different food for the different types, kapha, pitta, and vata. And if you know, and combinations of those as well, most people are not a pure type. So if you know what your type is, then you'll know what kind of food is good for you. For example, if you're very vata, then things like popcorn and potatoes are not going to be very good for you. They're going to increase your vata tendency. You want things that are more stabilizing. If you're kapha, then ice cream isn't very good for you. It's going to increase your kapha. If you're a pizza, then hot chilies aren't very good for you. So each of us has experience that there's certain kinds of food we eat that after we eat them, we feel energized. It feels healthy to be eating that food. You know, as you're eating it, you just, not only does the food taste good to you, but you just feel healthy. And there's other food that you eat it and you feel heavy and you feel tired. So in the same way, there's different occupations that give us a feeling of health, that give us a feeling of vitality, and there's certain occupations that give us a feeling of dead and down and heaviness. So, but the point is that we should do these occupations in a way that glorifies Krishna. So like the modern Vaishyas, they're generating wealth, but they're generating dishonest wealth. They're generating wealth based on stocks and bonds, which have no meaning. They're not generating wealth based on the products of the earth, the water, the air, and the animals. Of course, if they do generate wealth from the air, the land, the sea, the sky, and the animals, they do it in a harmful way. So I had the perhaps doubtful pleasure, one could say, of watching the movie Food Incorporated and how the modern farmers are creating food by destroying the source of their wealth, by destroying the seeds even for the plants. I mean, I wasn't so surprised to see the horrific, I was certainly aghast, but I wasn't so surprised to see the horrific treatment of animals being raised for slaughter. But, and I wasn't so surprised to know how the earth, the soil is being destroyed. To see how they were even dealing with seeds, they're destroying their seeds. So instead of creating natural wealth, instead of creating honest wealth, they're creating dishonest wealth. The Shudras, instead of protecting their arts, they're using their arts to degrade people. They're using their music, their painting, their entertainment, their skills, as Prabhupada talks about here in the purport, machinery, to make people's lives more and more and more demoniac and more full of anxiety. The Kshatriyas, instead of making sure that people have all facilities for spiritual life. They're simply exploiting the people. And the brahmanas, instead of using knowledge to guide people towards Krishna consciousness, they're using their knowledge and their expertise to convince people that we've all evolved from the apes. So this is looking at the varnas. Okay, now we're going to look at the ashramas. So the ashramas, the brahmachari ashrama, when we're referencing here Bhagavad Gita 16.3, and also this purport from today, the brahmachari ashram is really for when you're young. So very, very, very few people should stay in the brahmachari ashram their whole life. Brahmachari is a student. You're supposed to engage in Vedic study. It's a training ground. Now, in modern society, we have some people who stay as students their whole life. There are some people, they finish primary school, secondary school, undergraduate, master's, PhD, and then they go into what's called postdoc. They become a postdoc researcher. And the only thing they do their whole life is study and research. Of course, they publish their research or other people publish their research, but they don't even teach. They're not teaching. They're simply students their whole life, and they stay under the shelter of some sort of educational institution and other teachers. So certainly there are people like that. In religious communities, I was reading an article about an Orthodox Jewish community in America where there's a certain percentage of the population that just studies the scriptures their whole life. That's all they do. They don't teach. They just study. So, of course, it's important to have people who study and research, and you can go to them, find out, okay, what does the Shastra say about this? What does the Shastra say about this? And that knowledge trickles down to society. But generally, people are engaged in study and research when they are children and adolescents. It's a training ground, as Prabhupada says here, for both attachment and detachment. And the brahmachari life is you have nothing. Everything belongs to the guru. You do not have any independence whatsoever. The guru tells you do this, do that. Even you don't eat unless you're personally called. So all the prasadam is there. It's prasadam time. The schedule is posted on the notice board. Prasadam time is at 9:30, but you can't eat unless you're called. You cannot even make an independent effort to eat. Whatever is given to you, you turn over to the guru. You cannot make any personal decisions about how to spend money or how to use resources when you're a brahmachari. It's completely a training program. And you can understand from this description that most people would not want to stay in that kind of a position for their whole life, where, you know, it's like it's a child, where when you're a child, your parents tell you how to spend money. If you earn any money, you may not have the right to spend it yourself, where you do what your parents tell you to do, and you're free from other responsibilities so you can study. The brahmachari has no connection with any member of the opposite sex. As we said, no personal possession. They live in their guru's ashram. They don't have their own home. They certainly don't have a job. So the brahmachari is not engaged in any of the varnas, although the brahmachari is being trained for engagement as a varnas. But said Gurukula is meant for training in values as well as getting specific training for a livelihood. And as Prabhupada says here in this purport, the varnas are related to occupation. So in brahmachari life, one should be trained. In what varna are you? But you're not actually engaging in that varna as yet as an occupation. Okay, the grihasthas are for those who have attachment, vairaga and raga. Of course, Rupa Goswami says qualifications for bhakti is not being too attached or too detached. But if your basic mode is, okay, I want my own money, I want my own house, I want a relationship with the opposite sex, I want to engage. Also, the grihastha is the main person who's engaging in their varna. The main benediction of the grihastha ashram is you get to engage in your varna. You get to engage in your propensities for varna because it's only the grihastha who's really engaged in an occupation, and the varnas relate to occupation. So in the grihastha ashram, you really get to fully dovetail your psychophysical nature. Therefore, for the vast majority of people, vast majority, I mean, we're talking way up in the 90% here. From the time somebody is somewhere between the ages of 15, 16 until 50. So the primary part of life, when you have your primary energy, for the majority of people, the grihastha ashram is what's appropriate. It is very rare that a person doesn't want to act according to their varna. It's very rare that a person doesn't want to have their own space and their own money and their own control over their life. It's very rare that a person doesn't want some association with the opposite sex. That's very, very unusual. And it's unfortunate that, you know, people often have the mentality that, well, the grahasta life is just for entanglement. That's not a fact. And Prabhupada says here, this is a system to accelerate our spiritual life. And Prabhupada specifically talks about the ashramas, says the purpose of the ashram dharma is to awaken knowledge and detachment. Srila Prabhupada consistently describes the varnas as material and the ashrams as spiritual. So going through, for most people, if you want to come to the platform of detachment, you go through the grahasta ashram. Again, for the vast majority of people, because for most people, if they try to become detached without going to the grahasta ashram, then it's a farce. And I think we've seen this enough within our Krishna consciousness movement. That generally, because people just do it out of pride. They do it out of pride, they do it out of fear, renunciation, and the mode of passion, as Krishna describes in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Now, by the way, the grahasta ashram does not make you detached because it's so awful. People think, well, the reason going through the grahasta ashram will make me detached is I'll just suffer so much that I won't, you know, I'm disgusted with this. No, it's not like that. By doing the grahasta ashram in a way that's dovetailed with Krishna consciousness, you see that, like everything else, that it has its pluses and minuses. You see that for the pleasures that you get, there's also a concomitant sacrifice. And you see that engaging in your psychophysical tendencies in the world, even in Krishna's service, is not really ultimately what you want. Again, it acts as a painkiller to facilitate healing. And as you're engaging in bhakti simultaneously, you simply don't need that painkiller anymore. It's done its job. It's facilitated you. And you say, okay, I've, as we say in the modern time, been there, seen that, done that. All right, I've experienced that. I've had the money, I've had the house, I've had the family. And I can see, yes, it had its pleasures, it has its benefits, and at the same time, it has its sacrifices. So then there's, and in the grahasta ashram, the main sacrifices are charity, self-control, and sacrifice. Charity, self-control, and sacrifice. And the grahasta ashram means, as Prabhupada says, home, wife, children, money. Then you have the vanaprastha ashram. Vanaprastha ashram is dedicated to austerity. Now, so far, these ashrams we're talking about can be engaged in by both men and women. The student time, the married time, and the vanaprastha time. Those are available to both men and women. And vanaprastha is, for one, letting go of the house, letting go of earning money, letting go of so much entanglement with the family, letting go of earning a living, letting go of the livelihood. So, you know, we find the kings, they become vanaprasthas. They stop running the kingdom. They stop collecting taxes. They go far. This idea of retirement. And then sannyas, which is only for men. Sannyas is where you have to have complete fearlessness, where, again, you're cultivating knowledge, not Vedic study exactly, but wisdom. And although you're still performing austerities, the main aim is purification of existence. So the reason the sannyas order is not available is the sannyas order is considered to be dead, and one is living totally independent of society. In the vanaprastha ashram, you can still have some connection with society. So these are the four ashramas, and we can see that they all exist today in some perverted form. So there are students today, but the students today, they have their own money. They're engaged in illicit sex, right? The single life. And people go on in single life, especially now. I think this started maybe in the 70s or 80s, where people are staying single until they're 25, 30, 35, right? They're not really going on into the grahasta ashram or the ashram. And we see that the so-called single person, they're trying to get the pleasures of the single life. They're trying to get the pleasures of student life. The pleasures of student life is you don't have to take any responsibility for earning an income. If you remember what you're like when you're children, someone else is taking responsibility for you. So they have the pleasures of student life, but they also want the pleasures of the grahasta life. And we see that they'll go on, you know, without responsibility, and yet they'll have association with the opposite sex and money in their own home. Then we see a perversion of the grahasta ashram. So this is when men and women are together, with or without the legal marriage. or other even more unusual forms with people of same-sex partners, and where they're not engaged in charity and sacrifice. They're using birth control or abortion, so they're trying to get the pleasure of sex without the responsibility of children. They're earning money in ways that are not fully according to their varna, in some illegal ways. They're not money for the benefit of society. They're not engaged in sacrifice. They're taking all the money and using it for themselves. Another interesting perversion of the Grihastha Ashram, and we see this certainly in this country, a person tries to enjoy the benefits of vanaprastha or sannyasa life and the benefits of Grihastha life at the same time. So we see this where a person will be married, but they refuse to have children, they refuse to have a house, and they're traveling the world like some sort of a sannyasi. So they're trying to get the benefits of the sannyasa vanaprastha ashram and the benefits of the grihastha ashram without doing the sacrifice of either. And this does not work. This does not work. This is back to third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. In order to enjoy something, one must pay the corresponding sacrifice. So the pleasures of the brahmacharya ashram is that someone else is taking care of you. You have absolutely no anxiety for care. What's the sacrifice? You turn everything over to the guru, you have no independence, and you have no association with the opposite sex. So you have full time for study, full time for just diving into the Vedas, diving into spiritual life, diving into training with no other responsibilities. Sacrifice is that you don't have anything. You don't have anything. You're totally under somebody else's control. The person who's maintaining you is controlling you, and there's no sense gratification. Pleasures of the Grihastha Ashram. You can engage your psychophysical nature. You can have the enjoyment, gross and subtle, of the opposite sex. You can have some control over the money that you earn. You can have your own space that you can decorate as you like. What are the sacrifices? You have to raise children. You have to generate two things for the society, good population and wealth. You're applying the wealth of the society, whether it's in terms of money, protection, knowledge, or skills. And you're providing good population. The grihasthas are supposed to produce children. What are the other sacrifices? You have to tolerate the opposite sex, which is not such an easy thing to do. You have to be a responsible person. You can't just say, oh, I think I'm going to go to India for the festival and leave my kids. Or I got an email yesterday from someone, you know, my baby was born in June and my husband decided he doesn't like my nature. And so he left me to care for the child by myself. No, the sacrifices is you have to stick it out. Come hell or high water, you have to stick it out. You have to stay to your duty. Okay, and vanaprastha and sannyasa, what are the pleasures? The pleasures of freedom. Pleasures of freedom. So like in the brahmacharya ashram, you don't have anything, but unlike the brahmacharya ashram, you don't have somebody who has their thumb on top of your head. So you don't have somebody taking care of you. Therefore, the sannyasi has to be fearless. Only Krishna is taking care of you. But if you have that freedom, you can now go where you want. You can do it. You've been properly trained. You've been properly responsible. You've assimilated the shastras. You can spend your time doing what you want. You don't have anybody who's telling you what to do, nor do you have anybody who's taking care of you. So that's your sacrifice. Your sacrifice is that you have to have the mental fearlessness, the mental courage, the mental peace, that I'm just depending on Krishna. I'm not maintained by my parents and my guru, nor am I maintained by my varna. I'm not maintained by my occupation. How will I be maintained? The vanaprastha is maintained by collecting whatever comes or by collecting in charity. The sannyasi is also maintained by begging, collecting in charity, whatever comes. And some days a lot may come, some days nothing may come. That's the sacrifice. And of course, the other sacrifice is in the vanaprastha and sannyasa ashram. There's no sex life. In the vanaprastha ashram, one can still have the association of one's spouse. One can separate or not. But even then, even the subtle sexuality in the vanaprastha ashram should be gone, as described very nicely in the fourth canto, where the wife stops decorating her body. She stops giving even that kind of subtle pleasure to her husband, that, you know, oh, you're my hero kind of thing. That stops. It just gets on the platform of friendship and service. So we see that in the modern age, what people try to do is they try to take the pleasures of each ashram without the concomitant sacrifice. Now, my dear friends, if one does that, then they don't work properly. It's not the way they're meant to function. So for each of us, we should see my varna is something lifetime. My ashram is something that changes during life. I should see with the help of guru, with the help of shastra, what is the type of support for my bhakti that I need? And be honest. You know, it really doesn't matter. It's not that a brahmana is higher than a shudra in the ultimate sense in Krishna's eyes. Doing something artificially is not going to help us. You know, doing something because we think it's better. You know, just because something is the best doesn't mean it's the best for me. And just because something is the best doesn't mean it's what's best for me right now. The best medicine, the most effective medicine, may not be the most effective medicine for me, or it may not be the most effective medicine for me right now. Therefore, there are four varnas and four ashramas. So to decide which one I belong in, for the varnas, to make sure that everything is done for Krishna's glory, for Krishna's pleasure, for Guru's pleasure. See how I have a place in bhakti. We have to have a head, arms, belly, and legs. Everyone has their place. We need to have someone to chart the map. We need to have someone to provide the amenities on the road and to make sure the road is in good working order. We need somebody to provide the nourishment and the physical beauty on the way. And we need someone to provide the car. We need someone to provide the fuel and the clothes. We need all of that on our path to bhakti. How else are we going to go back to home, back to God? So it's all glorious. It's not that the bhakti done dovetailed as a vaishya is less than that done as a brahmana. And as far as the ashramas, we should be honest. What is it I want to enjoy? And then be willing to pay the concomitant sacrifice, not to steal. Not let me steal the benefits of the grahastha ashram, you know, while I'm in the brahmachari ashram. Or let me steal the benefits of the sannyasa ashram while I'm in the grahastha ashram. Whatever ashram we're in, be in that ashram honestly. Actually pay the proper sacrifice to the yajna purusha, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And most importantly, to remember that really it's not about varnashram. It's about bhakti. It's about bhakti. And suppose you say, well, I can't figure out what varna I'm in. I don't know what ashram I'm in. My life is a mess. You know, I'm already 45. I'm already 3 times divorced. I've got children from 5 different marriages. I've had 10 kinds of different jobs. And now I'm taking up Krishna consciousness. What varna or ashram do I go into? I mean, we may have to say, you know, look, we really don't have the right kind of painkiller for you. Your arm's still going to heal with the cast of bhakti. It just may be some more difficulty. The material side of your life may be, have some more pain in it than we would like it to have. But bhakti will still work. Bhakti will still work even if your varna and ashram is a mess. That's not the ideal, but for many of us at the present time, that's the reality. And trying to force everybody into, especially trying to force everyone I've seen into proper ashramas, just doesn't work. To say, okay, everybody should do this, everybody should do that, you know, it may be too late for some people. Like one devotee I met who was, you know, 58, and now I wanted to get married, and I said, you know, you really can't do that in a dharmic way anymore. That door is closed for you. So for some things, they may not be possible for us anymore. And we recognize that our lives may be more difficult because of that and more painful. But that is what it is. If it's possible for us to do our varna and ashrama as much in accord with the shastra as we can, then certainly we should do that. And we should try to institute this in society in general, because this it will accelerate our spiritual life. But the main thing, my dear friends, is our spiritual life. The main purpose is always to remember Krishna. The main purpose is not to generate wealth in a more ecologically friendly way rather than an exploitive way. The main thing is not to provide better care for people in general so that widows are taken care of and children are educated. The main thing is not to have cultural dances that help us, you know, that are Vedic and that are proper, and to have our own home-woven clothing. The goal is not just to have all our houses built according to Vastu and have astrological guidance. That's not our goal. Those are our supports. So while we want to put energy into those things, undoubtedly, you want to put energy into your support. Undoubtedly, you want to get the right painkiller and take it on time. The real business is the couch. That's the real healing. That's what we want to focus on. And at some point, yeah, here the word is used, upadi. At some point, sarvapadi vinimutan, tatparatena nirmala, rishikesham rishikesham sevana bhakti. At one, we reach a point where we have no more connection with these people. So I can't really go on today. I have to take just maybe one or two very quick questions. I've got a contractor coming in a half an hour that I'm going to need to meet.
So thank you very much. Sorry I went a little fast in the beginning. And again, please excuse me that this was a summary. And because it's a summary, there's some simplification. And because there's some simplification, there's also some distortion. So questions, comments, corrections, chastisements?
I'd like to ask a question that comes up often in our classes. I want to ask about the sort of the goal of what comes after our present ashram. You know, we've had discussions where some will quote where Prabhupada says that, you know, ultimately everyone should take the order of sannyas, and others, I guess myself included, would say that, well, really more important, when Prabhupada says he wants us all to take sannyas, he's meaning to really embrace the principles. Like Krishna says, anashrita karma palam karyan karma karotiya. Krishna describes what is the real sannyasi, the essence of it. So I was wondering what you would have to say in that regard.
Well, there's a number of places where Srila Prabhupada delineates the ashrams as they're connected with the varnas, which he also indicates in this verse how they're interrelated. Prabhupada says that for the brahmanas, there's brahmachari, grahastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. For the kshatriyas, there's brahmachari, grahastha, and vanaprastha. For the vaishyas, there's brahmachari and grahastha. And for the shudras, there's only grahastha. So I think that that's also true, that what your next ashram is depends upon your varna. Some people are never going to be able to take even vanaprastha. It's just not going to be able to do it. They're going to have to remain in the grahastha ashram. Of course, even in ordinary society, people do retire from making money at a certain point. And to be a devotee, one should retire from sex life when the production of children is no longer biologically possible. But I think we're, all of us are meant to become sannyasis, as you said, in the sense that, I really like Jay Ravindra, who explains it. He says the reason that death is painful is that all of our attachments are taken away. And the main attachment we have is not to our car or to our photo albums, but the main attachment we have is to this identity. So the sannyas is you die before death. You die to all your false attachments. And if you die before dying, then death is not at all painful. So that everyone is supposed to do. And that should be done, as Prahlad Maharaj said, now. That should be done when you're 3 years old. That shouldn't wait. That should be a theme. Also, I do understand that Srila Prabhupada says many, many times that he expects that one who wants spiritual life should give up the main features of household life by the middle end of life, which are gross sex indulgence and making money. So focus on sex and money. And again, that's even in the materialistic society, they have a right idea of people retiring from work at a certain age, from retiring from earning a living and going to a more contemplative life. So that thing is certainly for everybody. Although I would say probably the majority of people will still stay in their homes. They won't become a traveling mendicant. Or Prabhupada talked about how the vanaprasthas could go to the Vrindavana, go to Vrindavan or Mayapur and retire there with their families and be vanaprasthas there. But even that solution is not practical for everybody. Not everybody can even get a long-term visa to live in India, and not everybody's going to be happy living in India. Nor will everybody have the kind of physical facility they need for their old age, etc. in India. So, but the principle that at the end of life, one should become detached from those things is certainly applicable to all of us who want to be devotees of Krishna. So any other? Yes.
Yeah. A very nice class. Thank you very much. Excellent overview and summary, I mean. So I have a question, just like you mentioned in the beginning of class, how a brahmachari, in the brahmachari stage, as it was in the purport, that they're supposed to be given training for making livelihood in future. So
yes.
Obviously we missed that in our past Gurukul experience, and I am aware of so many Gurukul children who are having so many problems in their marriage life because of that, because they have nowhere to make their livelihood. So being in the education system for so many years, have you seen any changes to that effect about
that's,
giving
that's
simultaneously?
A very good question. I have seen some changes. I'm not sure if those changes are sufficient or fully where we want to go. And the change I've seen is that in most of our ISKCON-related schools, the children are being prepared for a livelihood in the same way the children are prepared in the modern schools, which is, okay, everybody be trained to go to college. And I think that that's better than no training for a livelihood, which was done in some of the first schools in the movement. But my understanding is that training for a livelihood for most people means getting into apprenticeships and getting into practical work. And even the professors who look at what enables a religious movement to survive and to prosper and to grow, they say that the children have to be properly socialized into the religion. And Prabhupada talked about having the children do what the adults are doing. I haven't seen that very much. I have seen that in a few places. I've seen one school where the children are being trained from a very young age to have a brahminical livelihood. They're being trained to cook. This is boys. They're being trained to cook. They're being trained to do deity worship. They're being trained to do yagyas. They're being trained to do astrology. So I have seen a school where they are training the children in a brahminical, well, in some of the brahminical livelihood. They're not training them to be Sanskrit professors, for example, at all. They're not even giving them an equivalent high school diploma. So I've seen one school where they're focused on a certain wedge, a certain piece of the brahminical livelihoods. I really haven't seen too many schools that are focused on livelihoods in terms of varna and in terms of apprenticeship. When that's happened more because the families have taken that on as a responsibility or in home schools. And I think this is an area that really needs to be developed if we want ISKCON to develop as a society. Thank you so much for bringing that up.
You being in that system, don't you have a group of people seeing the importance of it and implementing it in some way?
There's no system. We don't have any system. Nothing. Mm. Right? Srila Prabhupada wanted a ministry of education. He established that early in the movement. It never functioned as an educational system. And in the late 90s, it broke down almost completely. It started just within the last year to kind of wake up again and start moving around. And there's a number of people involved in that, including, of course, myself, who are trying to establish an educational system where we can start talking about these things, where we can start helping the schools do them. At the present moment, every school is an independent entity. There's no overriding system whatsoever for anything. Not for conferences, not for publications, not for training, not for coordination and communication, to the point that if there's three schools in the same community, they hardly talk to each other. I talk about this in the class I gave in Mayapur, which you can see online at mayapur.tv. And it's a serious problem. Many of us are aware of that problem. The solutions are coming slowly. But there, at the present moment, there is not an education system in ISKCON. It does not exist. There are, as I say, some of us trying to establish that.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Sure.
Just one question. Anupama, do you want to go ahead and ask, or shall I read it? I'll read it. She's asking how to bring up a child in today's world where he has to interact with worldly people but still be Krishna conscious. How can a Grihastha overcome this challenge?
Okay, that's a very long discussion. I have a whole seminar on this topic, and we could probably have several. I'm going to give you a summary of a summary of a summary, and that is have positive emotional experiences connected with Krishna consciousness. Tell your children lots of stories about Krishna and about Vedic morals and ethics. limit their exposure to mundane stories or violent stories. Become your child's friend. And then also make sure that your children, hopefully by age 11 and definitely by age 14, are engaged in meaningful adult-level work where they're learning skills that are meaningfully contributing to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. You want to give them some meaningful, practical engagement where they're also developing skills they may or may not use later for a livelihood. So those four things. Positive emotional experiences in relationship with Krishna conscious activities, stories, lots of stories. The main way that culture is transmitted is through stories, deep friendship, and meaningful engagement starting sometime between 11 and 14, if at all possible. Definitely starting before age 16. Okay, I've got a contractor coming in 20 minutes, and I have to get going here. Thank you very, very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah. Thank you, Mother Imala.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you,
Ramananda Ji.
Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.
Jai.